What you listening to, son?
Howdy, y'all, and welcome to Talking of the Hill, where every day is Angie Dickinson's birthday. I'm your host, ill-mannered, foul-mouthed old man Bob Mackey, and this is the Talking Simpsons Network's chronological exploration of King of the Hill, who is here with me today.
Henry Gilbert and I have something to say about both of your co-hosts.
Both lefties!
Oh my gosh, it's true. And today's episode is Shins of the Father.
Ah, damn! It's a shilly hack! That's like getting a shimp.
Today's episode aired on March 23rd, 1997. And as always, Henry will tell us what happened on this mythical day in real world history.
This is Hank Hill with the news.
Bobby, WrestleMania 13 entertains all the crowds in Chicago. Puff Daddy's Can't Nobody Hold Me Down tops the Billboard charts. Mm. And The English Patient wins big at the Oscars.
Later to be referenced in King of the Hill.
Which one?
I think Khan says, I'm going to die like The English Patient, long, slow, boring death.
Oh, yeah.
I forget what he was referencing, but it was a punchline for everybody. But I think, ultimately, people tell me it's a good movie.
It's a good movie now. I mean, it's a boring movie, was comparatively, and of movies people remember from the 90s, it is low on the totem pole.
Yeah.
Like Goodfellas, Pulp Fiction, other things.
There were only three movies in the 90s.
Toy Story.
There you go.
People remember those things, not so much The English Patient. And yeah, WrestleMania 13, I think of it with a classic Cotton episode, actually, because it's after Peggy is rehabilitated by Cotton, and they're at a graveyard, and Bobby says, he's standing in front of a Steve Austin grave, and he's like, is this the wrestler or the Million Dollar Man? And then Hank says, I need to talk to Bobby.
That's awesome. Who were the headliners of WrestleMania 13? I think we might have actually gotten this on pay-per-view.
Oh, wow. Well, it was...
You're not Attitude Town yet, right?
It's getting close, but no, this was... there were two things that happened on it. The main event was Psycho Sid Justice losing to The Undertaker for the WWF Championship. But the real main event was the Bret Hart Stone Cold Steve Austin match, where Stone Cold Steve Austin became a good guy, which he would remain for the next 4 years, and the top man in WWF.
Very profitable good guy.
This, if you've seen the picture of Stone Cold Steve Austin's like squinting face with his mouth open and blood pouring down his face with like blood dripping down his teeth, that is the iconic moment from this match where he refuses to quit and he's bleeding everywhere.
Every wrestler had a gimmick. I don't know what his gimmick is outside of what if your drunk uncle was a wrestler.
I mean, it extended from there. He would trick everybody. He was an ornery trickster.
The classic trickster god of the WWF.
I mean, he did a lot more trickery than you'd think. He also would drive. He was a working man, so he could basically drive anything. Like he drove tractors, Zambonis, beer delivery trucks.
That'll fly in the sticks.
He was the drinker. He drank beers all the time, poured them down his mouth.
All right, wow.
He also said, fuck you to your boss, so there was a working class ethic to it, even though he made sure to let you know he's a good old boy, so he ain't no commie. And then finally, his thing was DTA, don't trust anybody, and he had no friends.
Okay.
So it really crystallized the late 90s conspiracy theorist angry man, and you can understand why white men in as young as Bobby all across America fell in love with this masculine figure.
And he wrote his own Bible, and that's where Austin 3:16 comes from.
Yes, yeah. That was about 6 months before this. He's like, talk about your Psalms, talk about your John 3:16. Well, Austin 3:16 says, I just whooped your ass.
You think the blasphemy angle wouldn't fly?
Well, that shows you that the Bible Belt doesn't really care.
Are you telling me they're hypocrites?
If you're cooler than the Bible. One guy tried to come in and be like, I actually don't like you. He was trying to be a good guy. And he did a thing of saying, actually, Austin, I don't like you because you're blasphemous and no one should talk about 3:16 like that. And the crowd booed him, and that was the message of like, no, you being God boy is not going to help in this den of iniquity of WWF.
And then we also have Puff Daddy, who would continue his reign over the charts for a good, 3 years, I'm guessing?
Yeah, it feels, I don't know, in 99 or 98, it definitely felt like it was the beginning of the end when Godzilla came out and people didn't care about his song with singing over a Led Zeppelin guitar riff. That was kind of his thing. I mean, he was popular before that, but his crossover into mainstream was incorporating pop songs that white people had heard of.
Oh, he took hits from the 80s, made him sound so crazy.
Yeah.
I understand.
Exactly.
He sold himself to you in that song. It's like, you don't understand what I'm doing. Here's my pitch, my elevator pitch about Puff Daddy. Today's episode is Shins of the Father. I want to talk about the new writers for this episode. It's our little writer's corner. When we encounter new writers, we'll talk about where they came from. Number one, the director for this episode is Brian Sheesley. He would only direct one other King of the Hill, but previously directed two episodes of The Critic, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that name.
And also, he will direct season two of Futurama, which we have not encountered yet in our talking series.
Okay, he's definitely lower on the totem pole than of the other animating, of the directors I know of. But, I mean, he does a fine job here.
He gets around. Mm-hmm. And so the writers for this episode are Alan R. Cohen and Alan Friedland. No, you're not hearing things. They're two Alans.
Wow.
Yes.
They can only hire one woman on the writing staff, but at least two Alans.
We need two male, white male Alans. One of them is Jewish. I could tell by the name Cohen, at least. So they're writing partners to this day, and their first script was for The Nanny in 1994. I watched a lot of The Nanny. I have no complaints.
It was fine. Yeah. The only thing I remember, the most interesting fact I remember about The Nanny is that the butler in it was actually born in Arkansas, and he was pretending to be British, yes.
I thought the main character, I thought the dad on the show was Pierce Brosnan for a long time.
Yeah, it's like his younger brother or his cousin.
Less attractive. So before King of the Hill, their other script was for the NYPD Blue spinoff, Public Morals, quickly canceled. One character from NYPD Blue went to Public Morals to sort of usher you into the world of Public Morals, but I think it was canceled after like four episodes. So I know nothing about the NYPD Blueniverse.
No, me neither.
If you want to call it that, but there you have it.
I maybe watched two episodes of it ever. One of the top writers on NYPD Blue, David Milch, is one of my favorite writers. He's the only good toxic masculine screenwriter I like, but he is the creator and soul of Deadwood. I guess I'm feeling more, he's my Cotton Hill figure actually, but anyway, David Milch, I just read a sad thing about him that he's working.
I was going to look that up right now.
He's working on the Deadwood movie, which should be out on May 31st. And he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's a couple years ago. And it's just, he knows his days are numbered.
I guess I didn't know he was 74, so it maybe is not early onset Alzheimer's.
Yeah, no.
It still feels kind of early for Alzheimer's now.
I guess
but
even 20 years ago, he just felt like he was ancient. So it's hard to think of him as old now comparatively. But, I mean, every guy on Deadwood is just David Milch in a different costume, but played by a great actor. But this isn't about Deadwood.
Nope. That's another podcast series for another network, because we do cartoons. So they worked on King of the Hill from 1997 to 2002. And after that, I'll tell you what, TV is a hard business. So they basically did a lot of TV shows that lasted for one season, sometimes two seasons. So most of these you haven't heard of. So from King of the Hill, they went on to a WB show called Do-Over, which I've never heard of.
Nope.
It's about someone that gets to live over their life in the 80s as a younger person.
Oh, okay. I think I remember that commercial.
They didn't air all of it.
Okay, yeah. I think I remember that.
But one thing we might do for this network, if you pay us enough money, is that they went on to co-create the immortal Kid Notorious for Comedy Central.
Oh, God.
The Robert Evans cartoon.
Oh, man. That's
would be podcast about it? You bet your ass.
That day will come, I'm sure. No, the
listen,
boy,
I'm not going to blame them. Uh-huh. They wanted Robert Evans for Camp Value on Comedy Network, on Comedy Central. So they found two writers who were available to develop the series.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really their series. I just remember, man, that time in the mid-2000s where everybody was like, yeah, no, he's really cool. What a cool guy, this Robert Evans. I don't know. He's an interesting figure, and he's very charismatic, but I wouldn't believe his accounts on how he was the genius who made everything good.
It's like a much worse version of The Critic, and I like / hate how they drew him as he looked in the 60s.
Yes, yeah. There was a funny joke about how he wanted, you know the movie The Two Jakes? The sequel to Chinatown?
I've seen it. It's bad.
He insisted on making it. He's like, no, it should be The Two Jakes because it's me and Jack. We're just so similar. We could both be the Jakes.
Oh, he was going to be in it too.
Yes,
yeah.
And they said that he came to the set fresh out of the plastic surgeon's office, and they said he looked like a, quote, Chinese Jew.
Wow.
That's how they described it.
Not your quote, but
This is a quote from the book, Easy Riders, Raging Bulls. I'm not.
I've read that book. It comes up a lot on the show.
He seems like
on our work.
He seems like a disgusting man. On The Critic, you know, there was a funny they talked about Kid Notorious and kind of shit on it a little.
Maurice LaMarche, right?
Yeah, on the commentary, Maurice LaMarche is there. And in The Critic episode, they're seeing him doing a Coppola imitation. And then he's like, oh, I did a better Coppola imitation on Kid Notorious. I'm like, oh, yeah, what was that? And then he explains that there was a scene of him and Robert Evans arguing about how to boil water for spaghetti. Mm. And they start throwing spaghetti at each other. And then Al Jean just chuckles like I thought our show was inside. Jeez.
Mike Reiss was like, it's no Queer Duck coming soon. So after Kid Notorious, they worked on American Dad for a few years. They were co-EPs for 2010 to 2012. American Dad is a good show.
Yep.
We did a What a Cartoon about it. Check it out. It's a great episode of that show, too. And after that, they worked on a ton of shows you've never heard of that lasted one season, like Wedding Band or Guys with Kids.
Boy.
How about Betas? Oh. They also wrote the movie Due Dates with Zach Galifianakis.
Oh, yeah. The Robert Downey Jr., Zach Galifianakis road trip movie.
Never seen it, but
It looked to me like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, except for our generation, starring people in their 40s.
And their latest thing is the live-action/anime hybrid. No, I'm not making this up. Oishi Demon Hunter.
What?
There's very little information about this online. There's no Wikipedia entry for it. I assume it exists because it's from 2018. But it seems to be like a TV version of like a web series where like this Oishi person is a parody of anime magical girls from people who've never watched anime. She's in the real world and is a cartoon character. It's sort of like that Zoltan show. What was that show called?
Son of Zorn.
Yeah. Zoltan's from Big. I'm sorry. It's sort of like Son of Zorn, but with about anime, but not really, because it's not. I saw clips. It seems pretty bad.
Son of Zorn. You know, that should be we'll add that to the list of future What a Cartoon episodes. Mm. That show was on the wrong network. I got to interview the people who worked on it. I watched several episodes.
Name dropping.
It's can't remember his name. Boy,
Erica Cheryl Powell. Hines.
I did interview Cheryl Hines. I was trying to remember the executive producer I talked to. I think it was Erica. No, I'm getting confused with Rich Bell. The point stands. It was a good show made by people who actually gave a shit about He-Man. It was a He-Man parody made by people who grew up liking He-Man. But if you're going to make that show and you hate He-Man, like somebody who would make that about anime when you don't fucking understand anime, then it's just shitty. And I would fear could verge on racist. I would hope not.
It was leaning towards that direction. But hey, they wrote a lot of great King of the Hills, and working in TV is hard. I'll say that. It seems very difficult.
Yeah.
Look at all the Simpsons writers who didn't get a series. Like, I think Greg Daniels is the only one who escaped with as much success as he had before.
Yeah.
And David S. Cohen, obviously.
Yeah. If we're not, because Gene and Reese and Oakley and Weinstein, they did co-create shows, but they didn't really catch on or have long time. And they all kind of float back towards The Simpsons. Same with Mike Scully, the same deal. He sold a lot of pilots and is trying to sell more pilots now, working with Amy Poehler. But it's not great. It's not. It's tough out there. Tough out there.
Today's episode, though, is Shins of the Father, the first episode with Cotton Hill, and they've been.
He's been in every.
I was going to say that he's sort of been in almost every episode so far, but in flashbacks.
Yes.
So. When I was watching this as a 15-year-old, I thought, we won't see this character. He's just a sort of nightmare figure that exists in the past for these characters. But no, he shows up in this episode, finally, after all of the little hints of how terrible he was to Hank.
Yeah, when he arrives in episode 7, it really... And there's a lot of jokes here that only could build if he comes now in the show after setting up things. Like, this episode already has so much continuity paying off in it of, like, Khan, Luann, and all the flashbacks with his dad. Like, they all set up these, they all pay off things that have just been set up in the 6 previous episodes of the show. Like, that's how tightly they watch the mythology of their show for the first season. I will say it every time on the show, but it's real different from how loosely season 1 of The Simpsons went.
It's true, and now animated shows have continuity. It's not weird, but King of the Hill is one of the first to actually do it a lot and have major status quo changes for characters that they stuck with.
And I feel like this whole week has been us talking about daddy issues.
Oh, again. Yeah. Well, I mean, everything is about that,
I guess. Yeah. I mean, we're also the anti-dad podcast.
This show reinforces why we should be the anti-dad podcast.
Yep, dads are bad. I'm pro that. I mean, this definitely brings up a lot of feelings about my dad and family, but actually it's more I don't see myself as Hank to Cotton so much as in this. I do feel more like I am Bobby because I got to see my father and grandfather interact, too.
I actually didn't have any grandfathers, and I don't have a dad.
Wow.
So I missed that whole ball of worms. Wait, ball of worms, ball of wax, can of string, whatever you want to call it. I missed it all. But let's get started with this episode. So it's Bobby's birthday party. Bobby, of course, is the Thale son who can't even blow up a balloon correctly. Or, sorry, tie a balloon.
Yeah.
He'd probably just die if he tried to blow up a balloon.
Them not pretending like he has to do it. Them acting like he doesn't have to do it again and that he did it correctly and they just hang them up.
Yeah, hanging all the deflated balloons.
That is really making fun of the Thale son of just like, no, you guys should really tell him to do it over until he does it right, but nobody's
doing
it.
He's a damn millennial who gets a participation trophy. So Hank comes in. And it turns out that Cotton Hill's invitation to the party was returned because Bobby addressed it to Hell USA.
That was great.
And I like Hell Peggy USA. Said, I said evil, Hank. How you got the devil from that is beyond me.
Yeah. I also, there's a great callback to that later in the episode where she will call him the devil. And
right, yeah.
So that when that happened, I was like, oh, you do call him the devil. This is you lying that you said you didn't call him the devil.
But Hank insists that they invite Cotton.
I don't want Grandpa at my party. The kids are already going to hate me because you got the wrong kind of bean dip.
What's wrong with the bean dip?
Wait a minute. What's wrong with your grandpa?
He's got big plastic teeth. He screams all the time. His legs don't work.
Bobby, never make fun of your grandpa's legs. He lost his shins defending Texas in World War II. Now, son, pick up that phone and invite your granddad to your birthday party.
Okay. Hi, Grandpa.
Bobby, if you're gonna fake dial, you gotta hit more than three numbers.
Hank's not even mad that Bobby's tricking him. He's mad that he doesn't understand how to trick him.
I love that joke. I love that Hank is... just like, please try harder. Just try harder, Bobby.
Bobby is a very slow and impressionable child in this episode. Yeah. He's like silly putty.
I like him in this. He's written with a little more agency in most other episodes, but I like him in this one. I also like that Hank makes the distinction that Cotton was defending Texas, not America in World War II.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And I think the shins thing had been established before.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Well, because otherwise it would just be distracting and the previous flashbacks of him that he's so short and everybody's like, wow, why is he so short?
Has an interesting walk cycle too.
Yeah, I love it. It's just kind of like weeble wobble back and forth.
Yeah, it's a I mean, I'm sure somebody's shins were blown off in the war, but as always with the series, they're very specific in an odd way where a surgeon, now correct me if I'm wrong here, I don't think a surgeon would sew your feet to your knees.
Nor
I think
would
you would
work.
Just get prosthetic legs.
Yes. Yeah.
Or just have a wheelchair.
Yeah, I believe in that previously mentioned rehabilitation episode of Peggy that Hank just says, when they're questioning, Peggy's like, oh, all of his stories are lies. Hank says, look, here's what I know about my dad, that they sewed his feet to his shins. They showed his feet to his knees. That is physically impossible to work, and yet he walks around every day.
Yeah.
So I just believe it.
Yeah, maybe in 1940, whatever, that was a more common operation.
I mean, but your feet, I would think, if there's any doctors listening, correct me.
Yes.
But I would think your feet would just go gangrenous and not, there would be no circulation.
As
the
Hank
nerves
says,
wouldn't work.
All the hookups aren't there, as you would call them.
Exactly, yeah.
But yeah, so in this episode, I feel like they have not figured out the dynamic completely yet. In future episodes, Hank does not want to cause a stir about his dad's behavior. But in this one, he's at least just pretending to like him and pretending to want him there. In the future, he would not want him there.
Yeah.
And Bobby, in the future, likes Cotton because Cotton spoils him because he's the grandchild. That's always how the dynamic works, where the grandpa hates the son but loves the grandkid.
Yeah. Even though, you could see in the flashbacks, Hank was a good, normal boy and was treated horribly. While meanwhile, Bobby is incredibly soft and spoiled, and Cotton's like, well, you're going to put beans up your nose.
Yeah. He's even softer than Hank, but still Cotton loves him.
Yeah, I love when he takes the bullet for him of causing the fire as the stinky man. And
yeah,
that was great.
And it's so great how in the series that Cotton has other children he will love more than Hank. So there's Bobby and then eventually Good Hank, his son, Good Hank.
It's so cruel to
people
name
are going to think I'm bad Hank.
To name your second son Hank again. Yeah. To just like, again, he doesn't love him. He just simply doesn't.
But at the same time, his in his mind, the things he defines are in what is related to Hank. So his son is Good Hank and Peggy is Hank's wife. So still Hank is like at the center of his universe in some weird way.
I mean, he's a deranged old man. Like, he's, I like how unpredictable Cotton is in this, that he is awful, but they navigate in the future scene. Khan's reaction to him is kind of how the audience is supposed to feel. Like, I know he's bad, but he surprises me in certain ways, and I don't know how to react to this. Mm-hmm.
So at the party, Bill gets fucked up on a slip and slide, which is what happens to most people on slip and slides after the age of like 8.
He's lucky his skin stayed on his body in that. That's a classic Bill moment on a Bill highlight reel, him smashing into that fence. I just love that this is a great Bill-ism all over this episode of he acts like a child because being an adult is incredibly depressing to him, so he just acts like a kid.
They figured him out as like the giddy idiot.
Yes.
Before he was just sort of slow and depressed, but now he's just like giggling like a small child at the idea of a slip and slide or riding a pony.
Well, he's a manic depressive.
Yeah.
Because if you remind him of his divorce, he will be sad. So.
But Bobby is dying up there, as they say in the stand-up comedy world. Dooley tells him the party's boring and everybody hates him. We get a little bit more of Dooley in this one.
Yeah.
He's there to remind Bill that his wife divorced him.
I love seeing real butthead. That's really... And though, cut him some slack, Dooley, Bobby brought a banana in his pocket to boost up that head... punchline. Come
on. I mean, he's working with props. He's dressing up a knock-knock joke with props, which I appreciate. So the wives are talking to Peggy about Cotton Hill arriving. We hear some of the lore about him, that he married his nurse, who is not 16. She's 39, but some parts of her are much younger than that.
That's a good line. Yeah. That's just Peggy being funny in a catty way. And I love the animation on how angry she's throwing that coleslaw onto the plates. That that third woman there, it's like, you know, you're not really needed. Like, you're going to be gone very soon.
I don't like her because she's just a different Peggy voice.
Yeah, it's just, what if Peggy was taller and thinner? That's kind of...
Soon it would just be Min and Peggy and Nancy having exchanges.
You only need that triumvirate. You don't need more. That's the reveal on him being divorced and with a much younger woman. That is a very key component to him of, like, you're not meeting Hank's mom in this episode, you're only Cotton. And also that he did marry someone younger, but not ridiculously younger. It's like 39, definitely younger than him.
40 years younger.
Yeah, 40 years younger. But I guess what you'd expect is like a girl in her 20s or something. A 39-year-old is a weirder number.
It feels more realistic. Like so Dee Dee is like a very tragic character.
Oh, yes.
I don't want to know what happened in her life that made her want to be with Cotton, but there's a lot of tragedy surrounding her.
She wants all these things, though. She makes it clear, like, I like to do that. She's a bit soft in the head, I would say.
I think so.
I think
it's weird to see her next to Luann in a lot of shots.
Luann should see that as like
this could be your
stay away, learn some more skills, Luann. You don't want to be Dee Dee. Which, that is that even her name? I wonder if he just calls her that because of her breasts or D-sized breasts.
Ooh, maybe. So Bobby comes up to Hank because he's dying. He's talking about all the bits he's doing. We see the first instance of the "What are you talking about?"
Love it, which Bobby
doesn't understand is a Jewish impression.
Yes, yeah. He'll think it's what, Arizona.
People from Arizona talk so funny.
And I also love Boomhauer saying, "I am fat kids. All it gotta be funny," and then describing that John Candy and John Belushi that a knife and fork dug their grave.
I love that. And Hank doesn't even he doesn't even acknowledge that. He says Bobby will die early. I think in a later episode, Bobby points out he's not going to do drugs because he wants to be the first fat comic to live past 33.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's when John Belushi, John Candy was like in his mid to late 30s, I think so.
Maybe like 41.
Yeah.
These are warnings for me. I need to cut back, perhaps.
Well, you're not doing Coke.
Yeah, you know, that's the only Coke I do. Actually, I don't even drink Coca-Cola. Yeah. It's just wonderful fatty foods.
I think Chris Farley was too soon if he died during the writing of this. So
Oh, yes.
It would have been that previous December, I think.
Yeah, you're right. I think.
It'll be coming up. It'll be coming up soon. Yeah.
So they could in reruns. They could just change it to Chris Farley, and the joke would work the same.
But we find out that Hank has a special meal ready for Cotton.
Who wants a burger?
What? I get steak.
The hell you say? Yeah. Did you win World War II? This ribeye is for my daddy.
Cotton's coming. Whoa, if I was you, Con, I'd amscray before he gets here.
Yeah, if he finds out you're from Japan, you know.
How many times I tell you, stupid? I'm Laotian.
It's good that this episode came after the Con episode in the airing. I think it goes, in the production order, it goes Hank's Unmentionable Problem, West East Side Story, and then this.
Ah, okay.
So yeah. I'm glad they put these back to back because it reflects a lot of what happened in that previous episode.
Yeah, yeah. That Con is still new to them, but they will invite him over for a party. It's just the neighborly thing to do. But also that Dale and Bill are still... ignorantly misremembering his ethnicity.
They refuse to believe he's Laotian or even remember that word in any way.
They probably think he's mispronouncing Japan. They're like, you mean Japan, right? Yeah. And then they also, they're kind of enjoying racism too. They're like, hey, we're not racist, but boy, Cotton's dad is, and we can't wait to see what's going to happen. Ooh, boy.
So Bobby is trying to close with his burping the alphabet. It's not killing.
I love that joke because
that was Hank's idea.
Well, when Hank describes it, what he is describing is somebody saying things as you burp, which I don't want to make myself burp on air, but it's saying the syllable as you do it.
Oh,
it's not saying a letter, burping in a normal burp, and then saying another letter.
For some reason that went over my head. I didn't realize Bobby was doing that, saying A, burp, B, burp, C, burp.
Which, like, he does, so he doesn't do it. Bobby has a stupid frat boy trick that he can't even do right.
Well, it doesn't involve a prop. But thankfully, Cotton arrives to save Bobby's bacon.
Yeah!
Happy birthday, Bobby!
Oh, Dad, you crazy son of a gun. You really outdid yourself this time.
Well, you know me. I'm larger than life.
He's very small.
Where are its legs?
What are you looking at, Mo? A Japanese machine gun blew my shins off in WW2. So what? You like that horse, Bobby?
I love it, Grandpa.
Well, you can love it for 4 more hours. It's a riddle. All right, who wants the first ride?
Me!
Hey, Hank's wife.
Well, how long have you been here, Cotton? I didn't notice you.
Did it? Come on out here and gab with Hank's wife. Look at here, Hank. What you think of your mama's new tatas?
Oh, she is not my mother. Hell, we went to kindergarten together.
Hey, Hank. Do you still like finger painting?
It's such a great scene because it establishes his relationship with all of the characters.
Yeah, so quickly.
Yeah, like
too.
He's dismissive of Peggy. He loves Bobby. He hates Hank.
Yes, yeah.
And he makes a flamboyant entrance.
Yeah, and also that he also makes Hank uncomfortable instantly by like, look at your mom's breasts.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and he's disrespectful of his new wife and just commands her around.
And I also like that Joseph says what happens to its legs.
Its legs. What does he call him, Mo?
Yeah, Mo.
Is it because of his haircut?
I guess that's
I don't think he means homo.
No, I don't think so.
That's not the kind of, I mean, he used a different word, I think.
Also, I like his arrival on a horse. He's acting like your rich granddad. So when he reveals it's a rental, it's like, he doesn't have a lot of money.
Yeah.
I believe his money problems come up in like his next major episode that he's like, he doesn't have a job. He didn't save much money and he's kind of just living off Social Security, which does not pay many bills.
Yeah. At a certain point in the show, he's living in the VFW.
Yeah. Yeah. It's again, they make you feel bad for an awful person. That's the uncomfortable place they want to put you in. I also like in that clip that Peggy, she's clearly has a funny bon mot of like, I didn't see you come like up from hell or whatever.
Yeah.
And he just cuts her off because like, I don't hear the word you say.
It's like,
you
are talk no to this other woman I brought with me. Yeah.
Oh, a woman's trying to talk to me. Talk to the other woman. I don't fucking care. You're Hank's wife to me. And yeah, I mean, Toby Huss, wow.
Yeah. I mean, this voice is so great. Mm-hmm. The Con voice is also great, but they're so different. They're both a little nasal, but they're both also very different and very different performances. And I like the scenes where Cotton is talking to Con.
Yes. Yeah. Those are all great. Toby Huss is such a... we've talked him up before on here, but I mean, he was already the strongest man in the world to people of our age. And he's just so big of an improv performer. He's just like huge in his acts.
You can hear just the room around Cotton when he's doing the voice.
And Cotton is the perfect character for him to be giant in, because Cotton almost never says anything quietly, or like he's just high energy all the time. And I feel so many times like, I did that. Like he'll pause, like he's revving up, and then goes,
Ah-da! Like very declarative statements, like both lefties.
Yes, I think it might be my favorite voice role of all of Toby Huss's career. I mean, and this voice, if you remember his character on Venture Brothers, his Nick Fury type guy.
Oh yeah,
it's like 80% this.
That's right.
Like,
that's right.
Which is great. He's just such a. I'm a Hulk. That's his. Pretty much the same pronouncement.
Hey, he can reuse that voice.
I'm totally fine with that, because it's one of the best voices ever, and he captures completely the toxic, monstrous, like emotionally abusive monster that Cotton is. Like, in that he needs to be played as smart as Toby does, because it's not that Cotton's just cruel. He's also not stupid.
No, he knows how he's being cruel and how he's control over people, for sure. And I like that the show would eventually, years and years from now, like 9 years from now in the show's history, would kill him.
Yep.
And it would be seen as a victory for the world that Cotton Hill died.
It's just
a despite
better
Peggy, he died.
Yeah. Oh, God. And also, I love that Bill takes the horse when it should be the birthday boy who gets the horse first.
That explains why the horse didn't come back. I think Bill just wrote it off.
I think so.
To have an adventure.
And Bill also, animation error there. In a couple shots, Bill's shirt disappears. He goes from wearing a shirt to not wearing a shirt. I mean, it doesn't ruin the show.
Bill can take a shirt off whenever he wants. It's his right. So Cotton asks Khan for a Mai Tai. So he's slightly racist.
Yes.
But he correctly identifies Khan as Laotian when Dale says he's Japanese. So I think that means, does that imply that Khan is, I'm sorry, does that imply that Cotton is more racist than you think, because he can correctly identify a certain type of Asian man based on his features?
You know, I think it could be that he's, yeah, I think so. That he just looks at him as like, I have memorized every type of Asian face, or that he just made a guess and got lucky.
Yeah.
But Khan has had to correct every racist person in Texas so far.
Yeah.
And here he's like, I can't correct him. He's right. But he just kind of pauses. It's one of my favorite reactions of the whole episode.
It's a great dumbstruck Khan face where he's like, of all the people to get my nationality right, this guy
it has to be this monster. Yeah. And then also the Cotton, though, does racistly think he must be a servant of Hank's, because Hank would not invite a non-white person
there. He keeps thinking that. He asks for his luggage, a Mai Tai, calls him Mr. Khan.
Mr. Khan, yeah. It's the dynamic between them is very funny to me, and in a very sad racist way, but it's very funny.
Cotton insists that Bobby open his present next, and it is a 20-gauge shotgun, and Bobby is so cute and naive, he thinks it's a super squirter.
Yeah.
And Peggy takes it away, and Cotton starts questioning Hank as to why his wife has this sort of control that he can't, take over.
He's so mad that it even happened. I mean, a woman taking a gun away from a man is would definitely anger a man of Cotton's generation. And to know that it's loaded when they're all touching it too, I'm like, Jesus Christ, this is dangerous.
Could have been a real tragedy at Bobby's birthday party.
But Peggy can't be like, you're too young to have a gun, because they are pro-gun people, as we see in a season 2 episode. It's just that they feel he's too young for it, which he definitely is.
Bobby can't handle a blown up balloon, let alone a loaded gun. And we see Hank sort of, one of the many instances in this episode of Hank trying to paint over his dad's abusive behavior as a cowboy talk. You know, he's larger than life. He's a cowboy.
He's flamboyant. It's just all the things that's so great that when a man acts that way, you have to say all these things. But when a woman acts that way, it's like, what a monster. I hate this woman.
Men have permission to do that. There are many people I've known in my life where I would be like, what's his problem? And the answer would be, oh, he's just an asshole. You know him. Like, he's allowed to just be an asshole.
I guess he's just an asshole. I suppose he still gets to work here, huh? Or we still hang out with this guy? We all accept he's an asshole. Oh, well, he just drinks a lot. He becomes really mean. All right.
That's his personality.
Yeah. But
he's a character. He's a character.
Well, meanwhile, the only women invited are the one of the boys type gals who know the rules and play safe.
So we get a nice little pinata scene, which I love. So Bobby, first the pinata has to be lowered. Then Bobby's blindfold has to be replaced with safety goggles. Mm-hmm. And then the pinata is put on the ground. And then Dale cuts a hole,
cuts it halfway.
Yeah, cuts a groove in it with a knife, and it still won't break open. So Cotton shoots it, and that's when we find out that it was a loaded gun.
The whole time.
And you don't give a toy without batteries.
Get your Tootsie Rolls. I love how he says that, too. An old
they gotta
man
be, like, full of buckshot or something.
Yeah, they are all edible, you would think. The lowering of that pinata is the lowered expectations on Bobby by all of the people.
I like how long that scene takes and how many adjustments they make to make it easier for him.
Those things are hard to break when you're a weak little unathletic kid. I wouldn't want them. If you're an innocent child, Cotton shooting it and making it explode, that's just cool. What a fun guy.
Which is why Bobby thinks it was a really cool thing he did later in the episode. Yeah. So it's after the party, and Peggy and Bobby are washing dishes. Peggy apologizes to Bobby, and Bobby says, "You don't need to, Mom. He made the party fun." And then we have this exchange with Cotton in the kitchen.
"Take off them pink gloves. That's woman's work."
"Leave him alone. He's a good helper."
"Oh, whatever you say, Hillary."
"Cotton, I'll do the dishes. I like to."
"Permission granted. Put an apron over your new bosom, too. Don't tell her, but I got them cheap. Both lefties." "So, Bobby, what you gonna do with your life?"
"I'm gonna be a prop comic. I'm working on this bit where I stick a green bean up my nose."
"Well, now that sounds promising. Hank, Bobby and me have decided he's going to stick vegetables up his nose. He's not going to take over the family gas station."
"Dad, I don't work at a gas station. I sell propane and propane accessories."
"Don't sass me, boy. You ain't too big for me to give you a licking."
"Oh, Dad, you old skunk."
"Come on, grease monkey. Let's tangle."
That's great. I love how the guys refuse to accept that Con is Laotian. Mm. For the entire series, Cotton refuses to accept that Hank works in the propane industry. Yeah. He thinks he works at a gas station.
Every time.
Pump jockey, works for tips.
I love all his gas station stuff because
the family gas station.
It shows how Hank, if you know one thing about Hank, it's that he loves propane and it's very important to him. And to always call it a gas station is one of the most disrespectful things you could do to him. And in this case, he's introducing the idea of the gas station as he's saying he's going to stick beans up his nose. That's his job. Like, he is respecting the non-dream that Bobby has while disrespecting Hank's entire career. Like, that's, which as a person who my dad says he doesn't understand how I make money, that kind of touches me in a certain way. I just had that conversation with him recently. Like, I told him, "Hey, I'd file the taxes. Patreon did good." He's like, "Well, that's good. I don't know how that works. It makes no sense to me." I'm like, "You could congratulate me more, Dad."
My parents don't get it, but they choose to not be skeptical, which is good enough for me.
You should be happy. Yeah, I will say, be happy there's no skepticism.
I'm glad they're not listening is what I'm saying.
I mean, I've got that too. I can say whatever I want about my dad on here. I think the most realistic Cotton line here is, "Whatever you say, Hillary." Like, Hillary Clinton, one of the most hated people ever.
Hated by everybody now.
Pretty much. Yeah. I think there's a lot of sexism behind hating Hillary, but there are many non-sexist reasons to not like her as a politician. She wasn't good. That's my two cents on that. People who hate her for being for sexist reasons, they are bad too.
What about all the secret murders?
Google
Vince Foster, Henry.
Well, in that way, she'd just be similar to every male politician. That's so true. It's equality in that way, I'd say. I also just love how he's trying to keep it. He acts like he's keeping it a secret that he got two left bosoms, but he just screams, "Both lefties!" Like,
I don't know. I don't think there are such a thing as lefties or righties.
I don't know about breast enhancement. I can't say.
If you're out there, let us know.
I know.
It's just a funny idea that she has two left boobs.
I wouldn't think left costs less than right either. Mm. But all I know about breast implants is what I know about professional wrestlers who, when they pop an implant, they have to get some more surgery.
That's gotta hurt.
It's pretty shitty for women who want to do the same job as men in pro wrestling that they have to get fake tits to be taken seriously. And in a very physical job, that is a gigantic health risk that no man has to take in that profession. profession.
I think the men should get fake asses.
I would approve of that.
So Peggy fixes Cotton a to-go plate and assures him that if the horse comes back, she'll call the rental place. So we assume at this point Bill has ridden off with the horse to have adventures.
It's living in his backyard. He has a new horse.
He just
needs
a friend.
I also... You know, I never got into that whole fight your dad playfully thing. That's dumb. I don't know if you did that with your stepdad ever.
I did not.
I think maybe a couple times my dad tried to do that. I was like, I don't like this. No.
So Cotton's about to leave. His car won't start. Peggy asks Hank to check it out, but Luann correctly identifies the issue immediately. So again, more of the Luann people, disrespecting her actual skills.
Yeah, that she'd...
It happens again later, too.
And that she disrespects her own skills enough that, like, she is good enough to be a mechanic as a career right now, and she is... But she just has the opinion that she has to go to beauty school, which she's not good at.
I'm sad they dropped this because she is like so observant of the problem.
Yeah.
And by the way, a solenoid plunger is real. It does stuff in your car.
Okay.
Look it up yourself. It's not that interesting. So after she identifies, we get that line from Kyle's like, thanks a lot, girly. But the truth is, you're a girl.
So he does
not believe her.
Yeah. He's like, you cannot be correct because you are a woman and you don't know anything. Which is even better when you know that he ripped it out of his car. So he does know she's right. Also, his bad acting of, like, he turns the key twice. He's like, well, guess it doesn't work.
Yeah.
I gotta stay. When he knows he fucked up his car to stick around.
So Hank decides Cotton should stay.
Hank, we'll have to wait till your gas station opens up in the morning. I guess I'm staying over.
I wish you could, but we are all out of beds.
I don't need a bed. I can sleep in a drawer after what they did to me overseas.
I could sleep on the couch, Mom.
Well, that'll be just fine.
Excuse me for just a second. I do not want that ill-mannered, foul-mouthed old man to spend another moment in my house.
Oh, you just don't understand him, Peg. See, he's a big, flamboyant character, like a peacock. That's why men love him. But women don't like his style because you all are like the peahen, more subdued and drab.
You just cannot see your father for who he is.
Well, Bobby and I both want him to stay. So that means you're outvoted.
Oh, yeah? Well, Luann hates him, too. That means we're even.
Well, Jesus loves him, so I win.
Oh, well, what does that have to do with...
Hank can't defend his dad with also insulting Peggy.
Yeah, that he just paused like, drab. Like, he calls her drab. Like, that's pretty mean to do. And just her look on her face of like, what did you just call
me? You're a hen.
Yeah, you are the peahen. I was definitely getting flashes of Jordan Peterson there also using. But, I mean, that's just another classic. Hank is doing every classic cover of an awful man that exists. And another one is like, well, you know, in the animal kingdom, a man does this and a woman does that.
Yeah.
It just brings science. Anytime people bring up the animal kingdom in that way, it's to use science as an explanation for gendered norms that should be rejected.
Yeah. It's like, no, but we have a society, so we don't have to act like animals.
Yes.
That's the point of all of this. These clothes we're wearing and these cars we drive.
Peacocks don't build airplanes, so maybe we shouldn't listen to them on the roles that men and women play. But Hank, it's not that Hank, I don't read Hank as sexist or no more sexist than any man is in his time.
Yeah.
But he's just wants to avoid any conflict. And so he's just like, look, can we just, it's just easier if he stays here.
Yeah.
Let's just all swallow your anger. Like Hank has taught himself to swallow his anger for 30 years.
Yeah. And he's a huge coward in this episode,
yes,
which is not a manly feature, but I do like how Cotton, now I've encountered this with abusive people in real life, that they can become the victim on a dime. Like instantly they will become the victim. If you try to call them out to prevent them from getting their way, they will explain how hard their life is, or some past transgression or something like that. Like, it's very observant of real abusive behavior, for sure.
Yeah, I think it comes from people who learn as a kid that, like, oh, they're about to be punished. Well, if I make my parents feel bad for me, then they won't do it. And it's just emotionally manipulative. It shows Cotton as a more sinister figure even there, because it's one thing to just be a bully who screams at people and disrespects women, but instead his tactic of going on the defensive, which he's done since he came back from World War II, of just saying, well, I did lose my shins, you know, shins, and everybody goes, yeah, I guess you can stay. Fine. And then he treats you worse.
I think it's also pretty subversive for the show to do this with this character, because it was the late 90s. The Greatest Generation was entering their twilight years.
And Band they were of Brothers like, era.
What's yeah. that?
The Band of Brothers.
Oh, Band
era.
Of Brothers. Yeah, everything yeah. was about World War II. And here's a show that's like, not only does this Greatest Generation guy suck, he's also a veteran.
Yeah, he's a
I like that
veteran.
Idea. It's like, yeah. they're not all good.
And all his stories are so crazy. When he tells a story later, that's the first time we're like, this is impossible. You are lying, but nobody yeah. can call you on it. And that also is the power play he's doing there, too. He's like, you all could call me on it, but you respect the troops in World War II too much. You can't do it.
God, Cotton had so much more power after 9/11.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So the act break happens when he asks Mr. Khan to get his bags. I like how pissed off Khan looks.
That's my favorite drawing in the episode, yeah. his glare over his shoulder as he's watering his lawn. That's a really good one.
So the next morning, Cotton is up. He's mad that Hank hasn't fixed his car by 7 a.m. He says, if you were in the Army, you could have dug 10 graves by now. So I like that. That's his idealistic look at the Army. Like, yeah. look at how many graves you could dig.
When he was in the Army, it was about burying corpses. That's I like how dark his memories of the Army are. He could have said anything that people do in the Army.
So Cotton is pissed off that he has eggs, bacon, steak, and no sausage. Peggy points out that she can't buy him sausage. She has a job to go to. And I love the very metaphorical line dialogue. See, Bobby, woman works, man loses his sausage.
That's really good.
It's like literally emasculating Hank.
I also love that bit because Peggy made an incredible breakfast.
Like, yeah.
On a weekday breakfast for my mom.
Before work, too.
Yeah, before she would go to work. Looking back on it, if she made me cereal, that was good for her because she was going to her fucking job. But that's the expectation on women, that like she had to make a full breakfast for like eight people and all those meats, like one of those proteins is enough. And,
yeah.
And the way he lists, like, I see steak, I see ham, I see bacon. No, see, like that's another very manipulative, toxic person tact of like, you did above and beyond, but he will find the one thing mm-hmm. that you didn't yeah. do right, in quotes, and shit on you for that. So he's like, I know, sausage, clearly a terrible breakfast. You're awful, Peggy. He wants Peggy. That's how he treats all women in his life. He's like, you thought you did it right. You never can do anything right, and I can never be pleased.
This is also when the ass slapping begins in this episode.
Yes.
He's giving Luann more food because it later we'll find out, you know, I'll decide when you're an attractive woman. You need yes. to put more weight on your hips.
Yeah, it's not for a woman to know to think she's attractive. It's for a man to tell you so. And I'm glad they made Luann fight back and be like, you'll be wearing that corn pone, old man.
There's a great episode in the second season where Luann deals with sexual harassment, and I love that episode.
Maybe that we'll get is to a great yeah. episode.
Hopefully
yeah.
we'll get to another one of these series. We'll get to it. I love that one.
They take the hilarious idea of a aggressive dolphin yeah. with Hank and let Hank realize what it feels like to be a woman in this world. Like, I really like that one. I hope we get to that someday.
Written by John Vitti. His name is in the title of the episode.
Yes,
John Vitti right. presents Return to La Grunta. So instead of taking Bobby to school, Cotton takes him to a bar.
You sure it's okay for me to be out of school today, Grandpa?
Oh, yeah, it's a holiday, isn't it? It's Angie Dickinson's birthday. Now, why don't you order us some food?
Really? Dad never lets me order.
Yeah, well, you went with your daddy today. Go to it.
Excuse me, ma'am. Ma'am?
Oh, good, sweet. You'll never get no service that way. You gotta get her in the moneymaker. Hey, Missy, how about some sandwiches?
So Angie Dickinson, born September 30th, 1931. I don't think it's September in this episode.
I don't
but
think
she
so.
Was just sort of a bombshell blonde actress who was in a lot of Westerns. So, of course, Cotton Hill would know about her.
Okay.
And that's it. That's all there is
all
to
right.
it.
All right. That's a good reference then for him to name any woman. Hearing just the sound version of that,
yeah.
sounds like a real hard slap. Like,
I think asses are being slapped in this Foley.
Yeah.
Some Foley guy slapping his own ass. Can you believe I get paid for this?
it's a harsh one. And this is passed along in generations. Like, Bobby just sees it as fun and it just sets in. He's like, well, I'm an impressionable child. This is how an adult acts.
Yeah.
I guess this is how adults act.
It has to be exaggerated for the sake of a 22-minute story, but Bobby just becomes a copy of Cotton.
Yes, yeah. I mean, Bobby's an especially impressionable child. Yeah. And I love the design, too, of the bar. It's a real good old man bar. And
yeah, I was sad it wasn't the VFW that had not been established yet with all of his war buddies who we hear about in the flashback.
You know, he's just not used to the Arlen old man scene yet, I guess. I also like, it's unstated, but him taking him to a bar, I think, implies that Cotton is usually at least a little buzzed.
Yeah, I mean, he's on his fourth beer when they cut to the bar, so... Drinking is a big part of his life.
I mean, that's what Hank learned from him, too, I think.
That's true, yeah.
But I know from old Southerners that you call it tonic and you don't count how many beers. That would be rude, you know? What are you, his doctor? Like, your old relative wants to drink a lot of tonic, and that's fine because they earned it, okay?
That's just tonic.
The next scene where they're looking at the car, I really love it because... You think they're just thinking over the car, and then when Luann comes out from under it, it reveals that they were watching her do all the work the whole time. I love that.
And the solenoid is gone. The solenoid, whatever, the thingy in the car. It's not there anymore.
He took it out, so she had to replace it, which can't be cheap. Car parts are not cheap. So, and I'm certain Hank just paid for the whole thing because that's what you're supposed to do.
There's a very dark recollection that Hank has about his dad making him a chamois jumpsuit, which he would then use to buff the car. That's like a joyful memory for Hank, but it's just like child labor, like making your baby clean your car.
He didn't love you. He made, I just love the running gag this whole first season has been Hank remembering funny stories about his dad. And then when you see them, you're like, that's not funny. This is, but it's Hank's only coping mechanism. In his society, he can't hate his father or reject him. So he just has to be like, that was funny.
I choose to remember that incorrectly. Especially when Dale reminds him of the time Cotton took them to the Hotel Arlen, which was then a cat house. Is it a cat house?
I think that would... Is that the term? There is also the musical, The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
Yes.
So could, but I think cat house is the more... a genteel term for it.
And in the actual memory, Hank runs away.
I love that Hank probably hasn't even thought of that since it happened. He doesn't want to, and Dale makes him remember. I also have to imagine that Hank runs away while the three stay. I bet they took him up on his offer.
I bet you're right. That's what I was thinking, especially Boomhauer.
Now, I'm not, and this is also, this is a pro sex work podcast, but if my dad purchased a sex worker or paid for a sex worker for me, I don't think I would accept that.
I'd feel weird about it.
Yeah.
I feel like I'd owe him something.
Yeah, it's also, give me my agency to hire sex work if I feel like it, Dad.
So the next scene, Peggy finds the solenoid in Cotton's room. And this is when we have another argument about Cotton.
Damn it, I killed a whole day fixing that car. I don't understand.
Oh, Hank, what is to understand? Your father disfigured his own automobile just so he could stay here and drive me crazy.
Oh, Peggy, the poor guy just wants to spend time with us. And you've made it so hard for him, he's afraid to ask.
You're right. It's my fault. Why, oh, why didn't I serve that poor man his sausage?
What's the point in arguing? The car is fixed now. He'll be out of here tonight.
Aunt Peg, I found this timing belt in the laundry. You want me to wash it with the darks?
I choose to believe that's a zinger. Luann is a zinger.
Yeah, I don't think she's that stupid to think it actually wants to wash it.
She knows a lot about car parts.
Yeah.
And knows you shouldn't wash them in the washing machine.
I choose to read that as smarter. I also like that, Peggy, number one, she undercuts the fact that she was snooping around in Cotton's things.
Okay.
Like, she didn't accidentally find that in his clothes. She dug in there to find this hidden thing. Which, like, hey, he's an asshole, so I don't care. Like, but it's also funny that when she says why he's doing it, it's only to drive her crazy, which it's only part of his reasoning, I think. And then Hank's like, no, he's just lonely, and you're driving him away. And so he has to blame Peggy, too, which is like, no, he's probably lonely because he's a monster who pushes everyone away from him.
Yeah, he only gets joy out of abusing other people.
Yeah, maybe that's why he's so lonely. That's, I could see some things between me and my dad and that there.
Could you?
Yes.
Some comparisons, perhaps.
Well, though, I will say I never, I chose to go with the move far away and drift apart.
That's how to do it. That's how to do it.
Instead of directly calling him out, I am as non-confrontational as Hank in this, and when it comes to my father, at the very least.
My dad broke up with me, Henry. That's the way it should happen.
If only.
So the next scene, Cotton and Bobby are wearing no pants, and they're watching season 4 of Charlie's Angels because Shelley Hack replaced Kate Jackson, and as the intro told us, it's like getting a shemp.
I love that bit because it again tells you more about the interior life of Cotton, because he watches TV enough to have like kind of smart things to say about media.
Yeah, he watches a lot of reruns.
Yeah.
So getting a shemp is always bad, yeah. I think.
Though I'm with him on pro taking your pants off in the house. I think...
I find pants comfortable.
Nope. They're constricting to me. Bill Oakley, Josh Weinstein, they said the same thing. Like, the second I get in my house, pants off, I just want to relax.
I guess it'd be different if I went somewhere to work during the day.
I suppose so. I mean, I would probably take my home office even more seriously if I always worked in pants, but
I wear a suit and tie at home.
But
my bird is my boss.
But I do put on pants when you come over, Bob. I'm nice in that way.
That is true. Henry does wear pants when I'm here.
I also like his commandment for Bobby to make him Bobby, take your daddy's pants off.
Yeah, Hank refuses to take his pants off. He'd be the last person to take his pants off.
It's in a public setting. Yeah. Again, he doesn't. I wonder, Hank running away from his sexuality in that, I wonder how much it was like he didn't want to lose his virginity that way. He's also just uncomfortable with anything sexual. And to then be that overtly sexual around your father, it just was all too much for him, too much, as it would be for any youngster.
There's a nice misleading joke coming up where we think Cotton is more abusive than he's letting on, where what does Dee Dee tell him? I didn't write it down.
She says, maybe we could go home now. Like that, this would be another moment where it's all about going against your expectations. That scene begins, like if this were a drama, it would be, you know, maybe the put upon wife finally just asks a question to her awful husband, and his reply would be, "What did you say to me? Don't even question me." And
hits her.
And,
yeah.
And there is violence that comes from that. And that is the tone of the scene, and the music is telling you, is he going to hit her? Like, that's what you're supposed to do.
The characters are reacting, like cringing, like, oh, what's going to happen now?
And then when he said, reveals he didn't have his hearing aid on, he's like, "What's that? Oh, okay."
Yeah.
Like,
he's actually kind of sweet. He's like, "What'd you say, baby cakes?" or whatever. I forget what he calls her.
I mean, well, but then he does slap her, but on her butt.
Yeah.
In an acceptable slap, which you have to ask yourself, like, is this better? I guess it's better. I think that is the difficult position Cotton puts people in, because if he was just overtly racist, more so than he is, if he called somebody an ethnic slur, or if he actually slapped his wife, or any of those things, that is so easy to reject and be like, no, we all know this is wrong. I can't pretend this is okay. You're out of here, Cotton. But he goes just close enough to the line of like, hey, this is still kind of okay behavior.
There's nuance to his abuse, for sure.
Yeah.
And previously, I forgot to mention, Hank points out that he fixed the car, or that he found the problem, but it was Luann.
Yeah, he did.
And no one will accept that Luann fixed the car, even Cotton. Well, especially Cotton, who says a woman fixing a car is like a pig trying to read. And Peggy gets really pissed off about that. And that's when we have this next argument.
I guess you can go home now, Dad.
Nah, I don't think so. We're going to stick around a few more days.
Supper time, Colonel.
You forgot my beer. Go on. Get me my beer, woman.
Mom, I'll take my dinner in here, too.
Bobby, you will not. We eat our dinner in the kitchen.
Boy wants his dinner in here.
Well, we eat in the kitchen.
Here.
Kitchen.
Here.
Kitchen.
Here.
Hank, for God's sake, I need a little support here.
Well, Peggy, it might be nice for a change to have dinner in front of, the TV.
Well, go on, woman. Get me my dinner.
Oh, man.
Ooh.
Hank is literally sweating. They're drawing him sweating as he's conflicted.
It's a very pronounced sweat on him there.
It's quite an act break. Bobby Hill slapping Peggy in the ass.
Yeah. It is a real, like, you're gasping so much. It's great to go out on that instead of, and leave you to think about what a horrible thing he did. And just all his, like, they really handle it well. And also, Pamela Adlon does a great job as Bobby saying Cotton things.
Has like taking, a Cotton inflection in his voice almost.
Yeah. Just taking on his mannerisms is very good acting by Adlin. And yeah, that his little laughs, they make sure in animation many times when Cotton says an awful thing in front of Bobby, they would cut to Bobby and he's just smiling.
You could tell that he's reacting and, you know, learning the wrong lessons from all this stuff.
Yeah, and like that is what Peggy is trying to make Hank realize of like, you're not correcting your father to Bobby is a tacit agreement. Like, you're just silently agreeing with him and saying it's okay.
Yeah, and the third act opens with Hank saying, you know, I don't know where you got the idea. It was okay to slap your mother.
That's hilarious.
When Cotton slaps Dee Dee's ass, like, what, 30 seconds before Bobby does
I'd
that to Peggy?
I'd say like 5 seconds. Yeah. It's really
like
close.
Directly after that.
Yeah. Yeah, and he refuses to see it. He can't say it. And just his, and then he even agrees with his dad of saying, like, well, maybe it would be nice to eat out here for a change.
Yeah.
Even though Hank would see that as very improper. Like, that's a white trash thing to eat while watching TV, though I love doing that.
They're proud middle-class Texans.
I do agree with Cotton. I'm just like, I want to eat and watch TV at the same time.
We were a trashy family. There were no dinners at a table outside of Christmas, maybe. Mm. Actually, we were watching stuff at Christmas. Never mind that.
Thanksgiving and Christmas, at least one meal we'd eat together. Yeah. But Easter even, we'd be like, well, come on, no.
I'm taking my ham. I'm going.
I'll take this ham to go.
So Peggy is talking to Hank, you know, saying the obvious that Cotton is a bad influence. And she says, you know, you're a peacock. Go talk to your dad. And Hank asks her if she's a feminist. And we get this nice little speech.
I am not a feminist, Hank. I am Peggy Hill, a citizen of the Republic of Texas. I work hard, I sweat hard, and I love hard, and I gotta smell good and look pretty while I'm doing it. So I comb my hair, I reapply lipstick 30 times a day, I do your dishes, I wash your clothes, and I clean the house. Not because I have to, Hank, but because of a mutual unspoken agreement that I have never brought up because I am too much of a lady.
30 times a day?
I mean, those are all very feminist things that Peggy is saying, but the idea of if you're in Texas and it's 1997 and you're a boomer woman, that could be a label that you don't want, but everything she's saying is very feminist. Like, I have to work much harder than you. It's not fair.
And of all the things you think women just magically do, like having lipstick on, like they don't need to constantly reapply it, or also that you work in many work weeks, as many hours as Hank, but Hank is never expected to cook a meal. You are expected to do every meal. And yeah, I like that Peggy's reasoning that they don't share the housework stuff is just, she's too polite to correct it.
Yeah.
She's like, you know what? It's an unspoken agreement. I'm fine with it. You do your own stuff too. Fine. But I saw that even just a few years ago, there were like famous actresses who said, look, I'm not a feminist. I just don't think it should be equal. It's like, just to say you're a feminist has all these negative connotations. It's to it because of men making that feminazi term awful. So women, there are some famous women who, even if they would maybe privately say they're feminist, if they have to deny it, they felt the need to deny it publicly because that would put them, it would seem too political or something.
I think a lot of the characterization of Peggy in this first season is that she is an unwitting feminist, where this is one of like three speeches she's given so far. Like, Hank Hill, I do all these things for you because I'm a woman and I have to.
Yeah.
Like, this is the third, kind of like the third time she's done it. There was that really long scene with Hank having visions in that one episode.
Yeah,
I think it was Square
so
Peg.
Weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also, oh, no, it was Land Saga.
Oh, you're right,
Yeah, Square Peg had a similar speech, too. That one ended with Hank realizing how hard it is to be a woman. And this also is a moment of that, of like, oh, that's really hard, huh?
30 times a day.
Yeah, and also, it's just perfect for commercials and advertisements. They're like, I'm Peggy Hill, I sweat hard, I work hard, I sweat hard, and I love hard. And I like that she describes it as loving hard.
Love hard.
It sounds tough in the bedroom for old Hank. I also, right before that, Hank does say a line that really got to me, too, which was, what do you want me to do, change my father? Like, no. By the time they're 40, they are the man they're always going to be if they're an awful. I don't think my dad had any capacity to learn new things or to change in any real way.
Their personality probably ossified much, much, much earlier than that, too.
Well, at least for my father, he grew up in a generation of just like, I'm being sexist or expecting a wife to do all these things or expecting children to be a certain way. That's all normal. He's the normal person, and society changed too much to think it's not normal. So why should he change? Society needs to change back. That's his viewpoint, as I've heard him express, even out loud. It's interesting, though, with my dad and grandpa, they actually didn't like each other, but from an opposite way. I got the feel, I've never talked with him too much about this, but my grandpa was a Dixiecrat, and he still stayed a Democrat. But in case you don't know, a Dixiecrat was a Democrat when they were the racist party, and then when they ceded being the most racist party, the Democrats, to the Republicans, they still stuck around. They're like, I'm still a Democrat. I don't like Republicans. So they're the most racist Democrats, but
it's
they're
a historical
still Democrats.
Fact that everyone ignores when they want to say Republicans freed the slaves and Democrats are actually racist. Have you heard about this one, folks?
Yeah, I know. 180 years ago that happened, and this party's remained unchanged for 180 years. But so my dad became a Republican to reject my dad, my grandfather's being a Dixie Dem. And once did I see them have an argument when I knew anything about politics. And my grandfather was like, H.W. Bush is terrible. I only vote Democrat. And then my dad tried to get him in the racism where he's like, oh, what, do you agree with Jesse Jackson? Huh? Do you like that? Like, I was like, well, but you're both racist. Like, you can't you come to a bipartisan agreement?
We agree about this, right? I like to think that if a Southern Democrat ran for president again, Hank Hill would vote for him.
Well, I think so.
Yeah.
I think
he didn't like Clinton.
No, he didn't.
We know that.
Mean, yeah, everyone.
But Jimmy Carter.
I would think he would
kind
have liked
of.
Carter.
I guess they both made fun of him. Lyndon Johnson is the one he likes.
Yeah. Which he's the like he was the last a personally very racist man, but all the racists hated him because he signed the Civil Rights Act. Like, yeah, so which is a real conundrum about the man of LBJ.
So Hank tries to talk to Cotton about his influence on Bobby, but Cotton has another guilt trip for him.
I was 14, just a little older than Bobby. But I knew Uncle Sam needed me, so I lied and signed up. And we had beat the Nazis in Italy, and they shipped us to the Pacific Theater. A Tojo torpedo sent our troop ship to the bottom. I could only save three of my buddies, Fatty, Stinky, and Brooklyn. They were kind of like you fellas, only one of them was from Brooklyn. Out of the sun came a Tojo Zero and put 50 bullets in my back. The blood attracted sharks. I had to give him Fatty. Then things took a turn for the worse. I made it to an island. But it was full of Tojos. They were spitting on the U.S. flag, so I rushed them. But it was a trap. They opened fire and blew my shins off. Last thing I remember, I beat them all to death with a big piece of Fatty. I woke up in a field hospital. And they were sewing my feet to my knees.
It's a great origin that's all fake.
Yeah.
It's like a Sergeant Fury comic, but even more exaggerated.
Double so, yeah.
Yeah.
The 60 bullets from it, one bullet from a zero would kill a man. That's, but it's like he's challenging them to correct him, and they won't do it.
A really great animation on this flashback, Brian Cheesley.
Yeah. It's these guys love drawing action, a lot of those animators. They don't get to do it too much on primetime animation, so when they do, they really go for it. And, I mean, they grew up reading, like, the Sergeant Fury, Sergeant Rock, all those World War II comics as kids.
And I would believe in real life, Cotton Hill would not be saying Tojos. That is the TV-appropriate slight slur for Japanese people.
I think he probably said a different word. Also, though, the animation of it, too, that when he's talking about his shins being shot off, that it is like that would turn him into a paste. It would.
Yeah.
It certainly wouldn't get rid of his shins, but not his feet. Like, I think it probably, my guess is it was just an accident that happened on a ship or something. And he, you know, stepped in the wrong thing and it blew off his feet. He blew off everything below his knees. And they could save his feet, and they reattached it. That was always my assumption. And then his story of, like, beating them. He can't even just lie that he got shot by the Japanese, but also that he still killed all of them after
without a
he
gun.
Shot the, yeah,
with
yeah.
a piece, with a piece of a corpse.
We hear a lot about Fatty, Stinky, and Brooklyn in his flashbacks. I think the only one to return would be Brooklyn. The rest all died in his stories, though. I wonder how real any of them were.
They do sound like, again, characters from a World War II John Wayne movie.
My favorite Brooklyn callback is when Cotton uses him as an example of not hating Jews, because like one of you is in my brigade, Brooklyn. You know him?
Oh yeah, his name was Brookstein or something.
John Brookstein. Something like that.
I like to think that these men did not like to talk about their experience in the war because it was terrible. Mm-hmm. So he chooses to remember it as scenes from movies he stitched together.
Yeah, that also would explain all the drinking he does too. Of just like, you got to bury. Well, you're not supposed to. That's a great episode of King of the Hill later, where the battle between the World War II vets and the Vietnam vets.
Yeah, that's
like,
great.
He hates how touchy feely they all are when he expects you to bury your feelings.
So we're at Tom Landry Middle School now. Bobby is now a tiny Cotton. He takes away Connie's cake and blames her reaction on PBS, which I laughed at. It's a very Rugrats joke, but again, you could tell Bobby is just, he doesn't fully understand like what Cotton is saying, but he thinks Cotton is a fun character.
Yeah. Well, and PMS is never something he's heard of, so he just misremembers it as PBS. I like that. It makes his horrible sexism at least more funny.
Yeah.
And he's definitely bad. Like, you're not supposed to. The episode very much has a stance of like, this is wrong. Bobby is wrong. Honestly, Connie should have like slugged him for what she...
He deserved to be hit for that.
Yes.
So Bobby basically leads a lunchroom revolt when he's asked to bust his tray. Yeah, yeah, food fight.
I think it is. I mean, all children are easy to go to for sexism because they're all ignorant, so they just hate women anyway. And then plus, I bet those kids didn't need much of an excuse to start a food fight.
No. I don't know if they were on board with Bobby's philosophy. They just saw like, oh, chaos.
Yeah,
I'm a part of this. Hank's at Strickland Propane. He's conflicted about his wife versus his war hero father. A customer just wants propane. I don't think Hank would be as hands-on with customers in the future. He seemed like to be more of a assistant manager.
Yeah, I think it is a kind of an assistant manager position he's been in for 30 years or something. Yeah.
He's not like selling things on the show floor.
Maybe Joe Jack directed this guy to him. Or he could be a high enough level client that it would be worth Hank talking to him.
Could be. So Peggy calls Hank to tell him Bobby was sent home for starting a riot, and that he didn't come home. Cotton took him to the Hotel Arlen.
And that's where Peggy calls him the devil.
Yeah.
Just like, the devil took him.
She's basically making Hank intervene now. She's like, it's in your hands now. You know what happened to you when he took you there.
There's nothing else Peggy can do. Like, she has done everything she can, and she knows, like, Hank has to do it too. Like, As long as Cotton treats her as not a person, then Hank has to take action.
There's a device they do in the show a lot where characters will remember the past one way and we'll see like the future progressive version of that. So the Hotel Arlen is now just a regular hotel where there's a Women Trial Lawyers Association conference happening.
That's so funny.
It's sort of like how the old farm became like a very like factory industry farm. Like, it's just like things have changed. They can't go back the way they were.
Mm-hmm. One of the biggest opposite from hookers is women trial lawyers. So women who would sue him for all the things Cotton does. These are the most like high status women he could be around, probably. So that's even, who are also very conservatively dressed, all of them as well.
And Cotton is so proud of Bobby's sexist ride, he's going to buy him a sex worker.
And
pick
Bobby,
it out a live one.
And Bobby's like, for what? Like, he has no clue what this even is. And also, I mean, that is abuse. Like, make a 12-year-old have sex with anyone is that's abuse. That right there is criminal.
Cotton is very old-fashioned, let's say.
Yeah, I mean, he thinks, probably in Cotton's mind, he lost his virginity in some horrible thing when he was 12.
Yeah.
And he remembers it as good, so it's fine to do so.
So Hank shows up to the hotel and finally tells off Cotton.
Look, Dad, I'm sorry about Fatty and your shins, but I'm not a kid anymore. Bobby is my boy, and I won't let him grow up to be a woman-hating old fool. No wonder Mom left you. She was a strong lady, classy and smart like Peg. Maybe you couldn't handle that, but I can. My marriage is a partnership of equals. Peggy might do all the housework, but there are a lot of other things that I'm supposed to do, but I'm not going to say what they are because I'm a gentleman.
Oh, I get it. She's making you say this. You're just her puppet.
No, Dad, I'm saying all this because I mean it. Now, Dee Dee's out in the car. I had her pack up. It's time for you to head home.
Well, I never thought I'd see the day when my own son would stop loving me.
So Hank finally calls his victim bluff.
Yeah, I
love
that.
And the next line is, good, love's for sissies.
I love that. Yeah. I love it. It's a consistent thing in Cotton's character is like, he doesn't want love. He doesn't love his son. He feels nothing for him. Like, he thinks love is bullshit. And there's a lot I wanted to pick apart there. One, that he says, that's why mom left you. In the previous scene, or at the start of the episode, they say, like, oh, I heard he left his mom for a younger woman.
Yeah.
No, the mom left him, but people think he's so powerful. It's like, well, no woman would leave him. Mm-hmm. He would choose to discard an older woman. And so I like that Hank correctly brings up probably something he's never said to his dad. Mom left you because you're awful.
And I think he's also cribbing a bit from Peggy's speech that she gave him.
Yeah, he's just stealing it.
Where she's like, I'm too much of a lady to mention these things.
Yeah.
And he says, I'm too much of a gentleman.
Yeah.
Like, she does a lot of things for me. He's kind of like repeating her speech from his perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't think of that wording. I just thought it meant that Hank is like, and I do sex things that I don't want to talk about. Mm-hmm. And also, I wanted to point at the Freudian moment of Hank describing what was good about his mom, and then saying, like Peggy. Directly saying his mom is similar to his wife.
Okay.
Which they do look a little similar.
They do.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, hey, look, it's they're a happy couple. I don't want to pick apart at their relationship.
Well, we'll meet his mom in season two. It's
yes.
a great episode. Where
a really
Hank goes blind
one.
From seeing his mom having sex.
That's so good. Carl Reiner, what a great guy. And Tammy Wynette, the late Tammy Wynette.
So Cotton announces to the hookers he'll be back next year. Mm-hmm. Don't jack up your prices.
Ain't that right, you house full of hookers?
So, and he uses the word jacking. Don't be jacking up those prices.
Jacking,
so I feel like that was intentional. Hank tries to impart a moral onto Bobby. Unfortunately, the rest of the world does not cooperate.
Bobby, you gotta try and forget all that gobbledygook your grandpa told you. You listen to your mother. She knows best.
But she's a woman. How could she know better than grandpa?
Well, because she's a lot smarter than him, for one. Your mother's probably got a better head on her shoulders than anybody in Arlen.
Better than Bill? Or Dale? Or Boomhauer?
Jeez, Bobby, why not compare her to a baboon in the zoo?
But I thought they were your best friends.
Peggy's my best friend, son.
Mom?
That's right. And when you're older, I hope you're lucky enough to find a girl to be best friends with, too.
You think that'll really happen to me?
Well, it won't if you keep slapping them in the butt and ordering them around. You'll do okay. You just have to remember one thing. Women were not put on this earth to serve you and me. Now, what do you say we get an ice cream?
They're being served by women on roller skates.
I love that ending.
Yeah.
It's so funny. They don't need it. Like, him saying, it's a bit strong enough of a laugh of Cotton saying, telling all the trial lawyers that Hank Hill and
I'll be at Hank Hill's house. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good, like, shock. They could go out on that. But they needed a scene of Hank directly telling Bobby not to do that and to unbrainwash him. And then it's just such a clever device that of just saying, like, yeah, no, that's awful sexism. Let's ignore all the mild sexism that just surrounds our existence.
Yeah, like, even if Hank tries to teach Bobby the right lesson, society is reinforcing the wrong ones.
Well, and Hank sees nothing wrong with it either.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, no, women aren't put on earth to serve us. Now let's go to this place that just happens to have only cute girls in dresses serving us and acting as our slaves. I love that gag. And that was, happening in the 90s. Those were popular, like, throwback 50s diner type thing. Well, not diner, drive-thrus, whatever.
Yeah, I was never served by anyone on roller skates before.
Yeah,
seems
you've
dangerous.
Never been to a Sonic then, I guess.
No,
that's,
no.
That's a Sonic is right up there with Whataburger as a top Texas chain that has spread throughout the South.
We had an old-timey A&W in my town that had the lot that people used to park in to be served at their cars, but when I existed, no one ever used it for that. They did not have that kind of service.
As I recall going to a Sonic in the early 2000s, it was a very non-gendered thing. Like, men and women delivered it, and they all wore the same outfit. So it was, you definitely got the, you know, You got to feel like a big fancy man that a person on roller skates came to your car to give you your food. That felt fun. But as for Sonic's food, they make fine. You can get like a patty melt on Texas toast. That's always tasty. Mm. And also, yeah, they are the best slushies of any fast food chain.
I'm hungry now. We have to eat lunch.
It's about lunchtime, yes. Yeah. Well, you'll find no Sonics where we live, unfortunately.
But anyways, thanks for listening to Talking of the Hill. I guess final thoughts on this episode. I love it. These have all been really good. Another great episode and a new character, and he'll be back a lot.
Cotton is, Toby Huss's Cotton is one of the best characters in the entire show. He's always great. I love that he's an unpredictable monster. And also, yeah, all the dad feelings on it as well really stirred in me. Like I it's tough for me sometimes, but I really love it too. And that it to give a character your main character such a complicated relationship with his father is a very, bold choice. I like that a lot.
And it's interesting that Cotton is the extreme that Hank can't resort to sort of toughen up Bobby. Like, Hank's in the middle between Bobby and Cotton. Yeah. He sees, Cotton as the ultimate example of how not to raise a child.
Yeah, and maybe that is why he is too soft on Bobby at times, perhaps. But at the very least, I would, if it was me, I would have told Bobby, could you tie that again? Here, let me show you how to tie the balloon
correctly. Yeah, yeah. Teach him to be a little more self-sufficient.
But also, I don't like balloons. They're gross to me.
Yeah, gross. They pollute. They choke fish and birds and stuff. Don't buy balloons, everybody.
Balloons are bad.
Anyhow, thanks for listening to this episode of Talk King of the Hill. It's been a lot of fun. We appreciate your patronage, of course.
Stick
around because we're only halfway through this first season. We got a few more to go. So one of the episodes from this season actually shows up in the second season. It's production season one, so we're going to be doing it for this series. So yeah. The Company Man, it's a very important episode with Buck Strickland introduces him.
The Otherton.
Yes, but for some reason they held it over to season two, which I don't understand.
Yeah,
it's a good episode. Yeah.
Why air 12 instead of 13? Maybe they...
Yeah.
Well, it had a mid-season premiere, it had a January premiere, so maybe they're like, well, this will have to air in June. That's kind of after we air things.
That's true. It was such a hit, though, but yeah. You're probably right about that. But thanks for listening once again. We'll see you next week for Peggy, the Boggle Champ. We'll see you then.
I don't know. Sometimes things just disappear for no logical reason. One day my cousin woke up, his kidney was gone. At the same time, 500 miles away, a woman in Phoenix contracted diabetes.